step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hope for the best.
Expect the worst. Some preacher pain, some dire thirst.
Welcome to the Commentary Magazine Daily Podcast. Today is Friday, March 31st, 2023. I'm John Podhoretz, the editor of Commentary Magazine. With me, as always, executive editor Abe Greenwald. Hi, Abe.
Hi, John.
Media commentary columnist Christine Rosen. Hi, Christine.
Hi, John.
And Christine's American Enterprise Institute colleague, Washington commentary columnist Matthew Continetti. Hi, Matt.
Hi, John.
Okay, Donald Trump has been indicted. That's okay. We'll see you on Monday. Show's over. I genuinely don't know what to say, so I'm going to turn it over. You guys talk amongst yourselves. Please,
I'll jump in and say one thing. Up until I had heard that the story break yesterday, I had started to wonder if he kind of made the whole thing up, or not made it up entirely, but you know, sort of really pushed this sort of stretch of a story to effectively get the sympathy that he had garnered. And then
the story broke a couple weeks ago because they had invited him to testify before the grand jury, and we were told in the course of the New York Times reporting on this that was usually the end game, that you invited the target to testify, the target would then decline, and then you would indict, that it was like dotting I's and crossing T's. And okay, I assume that's true. I don't know if it's true. We don't know that. Did the opposite effect happen, which is, did he immanentize the eschaton? Did he actually bring about the end that he was leaking about in the first place by pushing Bragg? I assume not. I assume it's, and we'll never know, really. I mean, we will know, actually.
Well, we know that David Pecker, the head of the National Enquirer, was the last witness to be called.
Right.
And that's a little bit unusual. But we don't know what the indictment is until we read the indictment, which doesn't seem to be unsealed until Trump is arraigned, which appears to be scheduled for next Tuesday. We really won't know the details of the case. I will say this, you know, it's a very important news day when Don Lemon breaks out the jacket and tie. So when I turned on CNN this morning, there was Don, who was looking very dapper, you know, and so, you know, this is a big news day.
Matt, I'm very proud of you because I think you've done America a great service, because you are the one person who tuned into CNN this morning.
I'm in
that show.
Keeping those ratings
that show is apparently registering ratings.
Yeah,
well, so low that the game show network's rebroadcast of Match Game 72 beats it. So,
well, there's the one house in McLean, Virginia, that has it on right before the commentary podcast.
Can I add that there are, Matt's absolutely right, the indictment's under seal, we don't know. The only new sort of leaked information was the suggestion that there are some documents that Bragg has discovered that haven't been in the news. So it was this sort of tease of like, oh, we found stuff that no one's heard about and that's what we're going to reveal. So we don't know. We shouldn't speculate too much. We kind of have a sense, given what Trump himself said and what previous news reports have said. I was very keen on seeing what the reaction to this news was. So, you know, anyone who, I still, as a dinosaur Luddite, get print newspapers delivered to my home. So for you Gen Zers out there, this is a process where someone actually throws a paper on your front door stoop, like sometime in the early morning. I'm an early riser. My papers are always there. But I opened up the New York Times early this morning, and there is a sort of orange toned picture of Trump and, you know, Trump indicted. Nancy Pelosi's reaction, which we discussed a little bit offline on our text thread last night, was shocking. She said that now Trump has to prove his innocence. So note to Nancy.
Our system gives him this chance. All have to understand that he now gets his day in court where he can prove his innocence.
And so, Nancy, no, you have to prove his guilt. That's how the system, he's innocent until you prove his guilt. So that was a fascinating little slip of the tweet there. I assume she has staffers tweet for her, but now she's in a bind because if she does, she doesn't want to admit that a staffer made this error. So she's got to kind of own that. A little less jubilation than I expected from the kind of anti-Trumpers. So we'll see how that plays out. I think a lot of people have been discussing in these past, since Trump made his announcement on Truth Social about his imminent arrest, people have been discussing the weakness of this case for a while. And even many Democrats are not sure this is the one that's going to get him. So we'll see.
Can we go to your Luddism for a minute? Because I think that you bring up, by bringing that up, you bring up the central concern that I had yesterday upon the announcement of this and the immediate react world, which is this idea that you react to an indictment that you haven't seen, and we have maybe the entirety of the Republican Party defending Trump against the indictment when they don't know what the indictment is. I don't think that would have been the case this fast. This whole thing would have unrolled and unraveled differently, obviously, in a pre-internet, pre-social media era. But the classic rule of thumb is you keep your powder dry. Like, you don't know what's in the indictment. You don't know what it says. Chances are good when somebody is indicted that they're going to be convicted of the crime for which they are indicted. So you don't want to go on the record as saying anything that someone can throw back in your face if things go in a certain direction. And yet we have Ron DeSantis, many House Republicans.
DeSantis did not mention Trump by name, though. Did he in his tweet?
He didn't, which
he did not say his name.
I mean, honestly, you know, there's been these weeks of questions about whether DeSantis is ready for primetime. And I don't think that any of that is real. I am very alarmed by the judgment that he is showing in real time about issues that are before the American people and where he, his people, whoever they are, go when faced with a controversy. And it seems to me like they are going, if his pitch is that he wants to be the guy you can vote for instead of Trump, yet again, he has demonstrated that he is so concerned about not offending people who might otherwise vote for Trump, that he is endorsing this psychotic idea that he, the governor of Florida, would have some role to play in not extraditing Trump from Florida to New York, which, let's just make this clear, that is insane. That is madness. He goes there because Matt Gaetz and the lunatics of Gaetzville and all of that raised this idea that he should like post guards outside of Mar-a-Lago to prevent Trump from being dragged from Florida to Manhattan. I mean, am I taking crazy pills? So now he plays footsie with that in the tweet he puts last night. We will not participate in his extradition. You don't participate in his extradition.
That's like, by definition, an extradition is where they come and take something that and needs to
he's
be.
He's not being extradited.
I know. He's got to show up on his
surrender
own.
And right. He will surrender on Tuesday. And so DeSantis is just feeding this crazy beast. And I think that that is an indication of the fact that if Trump gets through this year without these indictments or without being convicted of a crime, he will be the Republican nominee by acclamation.
Yeah.
It is now over. There is no race without Trump being convicted.
Well, first, we can add this to the number of Donald Trump firsts. He was the first president to be elected with no prior experience in military or government. and it showed. He was the first president to be impeached twice, and now he is the first former president to be charged with a criminal offense. And the stunning thing is the rapidity with which the Republican Party rallied behind him. This is amazing. Mike Pence, Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Tim Scott, every single potential challenger to Trump immediately launches to his defense. Now, what's going to happen when the other indictments roll out? Because I think one of the major takeaways from this indictment,
this thing, it's like, okay, this one has teeth. This one, okay, this, you know what, the first one was bad. I don't know. This
they're going to back off. Yeah. Well, we have to be judicious.
Yeah.
And while I disagree with Alvin Bragg's prosecutorial decision, I think Jack Smith makes a good case.
Yeah.
So they're all, once again, he's forced the party, or his supporters, fear of his supporters, have forced the party into defending him. But I think one consequence of the indictment is all the other ones are much more likely now. I mean, we talk about legitimacy barriers and all the norms that have been broken since Donald Trump entered American politics in 2015. Bragg broke the norm against indicting a major political figure, a former president, a presidential candidate of the opposite party. And now that he's done that, there's nothing to stop Fani Willis from doing the same,
or
Merrick Garland. I mean, you're in a situation where by the end of the year, Trump could be indicted four times.
Okay, but if you're, but this part of it, I have to, two things. I think Matt's point about the Republican response doesn't just show Trump's power, but it shows the sort of broader identity crisis that the Republicans have been in even before Trump, but that Trump, you know, accelerated and exacerbated. The fact that they responded that way shows that they really cannot make a stand for what they think the party in the future should be, absent Trump or even with Trump. Like, there's just no idea. There's no clear identity there. But if I were, look, if I were a politically minded conservative billionaire or a very ambitious young prosecutor with an R after my name, and I would move to Delaware right now and I would start thinking about what the next 8 to 10 years might look like for my career if we're now indicting former presidents for criminal offenses. Because you know what? Whether or not any of it sticks, you're right. That gate having been brought down is going to lead to it's not good for our system. I just think it's going to lead to a lot more political prosecutions and a lot of mistrust in the legitimacy of our justice system, unfortunately, even though the whole point is that no one is above the law. I still believe that.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, we're all over the map here. So this opens the Pandora's box of, you know, prosecuting your counterparty enemies or whatever. And then we have multiple indictments. We have the Republican Party rallying to Trump's side at what is, I think, unambiguously the lowest moment of the last 7 years. I mean, I this is worse than the impeachments, because it was kind of a foregone conclusion when the impeachments happened that he wasn't actually going to get convicted, particularly after 1998, when we had the first impeachment of a president since 1868, and Clinton, you know, skated right through that, even though I think everybody sort of knew that he had committed the underlying offense. And there weren't 67 votes to convict him in the Senate. We all knew that either time. Here we have a situation in which these indictments, we say it's a weak case. We don't know what the case is. Everyone says it's a weak case. The narrative that was propounded in the New York Times about the case makes it seem weak and weird, because it supposedly involves using state statutes to prosecute a federal crime, and I don't know whatever else. But I'm not saying it's the likelihood that he will be convicted, but there is a high possibility that he will be convicted of what he is charged with here in New York State. I mean, 50-50, I don't know. Even if it's 30-70 or 40-60, this is the worst peril that Trump has ever been in. because it turns out that the kind of perils that we assumed would derail his candidacy and even his presidency, notably being dragged across the rocks of public reputation by the Access Hollywood tape and whatever he said in Charlottesville and whatever else, none of that affects him. And in fact, it gives him some kind of demonic steam. He has no control over this now. None. He has no control over how 12 members of a jury will hear and reckon with this information, except for the same controls that everybody else has, which is Nancy Pelosi, that you are innocent until proven guilty and that your guilt must be proved beyond a reasonable doubt in a courtroom as you are judged by a jury of your peers. But this is new. I mean, we really are. This is why I say it's weird that the Republicans did what they did last night.
Well,
but they need to chill out. First of all, anybody who was running against him, that is defending him, that defended him last night, and I include DeSantis here, you might as well get out of the race. Because either way, here's what you did. Either he will be found innocent, or the case will be dropped or something like that. In which case, you have already basically established that he's going to be the nominee. And if he's convicted, you will have defended him you will have defended him throughout the period before he was convicted of a crime by a jury of his peers. So good luck to you in the general election. You have now screwed the pooch for yourself with independent voters. Good work. Congratulations to you. Sei gesund. Thanks very much.
Okay. Aren't we being a little harsh on the Republicans here? Because I agree with you about keeping your powder dry, and I think strategically this could backfire in exactly the ways you describe. But what if this remains? What if the fact remains that the case is a preposterous stretch? A lot of what's being said is in response to that. To the same things that, similar to things that we've said about the case before. I mean, if it is this, you know, this sort of double twist that tries to turn one crime into a campaign crime on an untested legal theory, I haven't seen anything. Well, we haven't seen anything, but we're kind of assuming that there's something new that undoes that really rickety legal premise before. And my gut, having seen the way the sort of forces against Trump operate these past few years, tells me that it probably remains a stretch of a case.
And I actually, John, I think that voters, particularly once by the time we get to a general election, will have forgotten about a lot of this. And as much as I think the media will constantly play that tune to them, it's not, I'm not sure that will stick if he's not the nominee. So if I could, I mean, if you try to get, I have no idea why DeSantis tried to thread this needle, but what I saw from his tweet, for example, was an effort to signal, I'm a tough on crime, I would not have non-progressive type prosecutors allowed to get away with crazy politicized charges. But I don't see anything in that tweet that wouldn't allow him later to pivot if an indictment in, say, the Georgia election or the documents case came down that showed he'd done something more serious than what we're speculating he's been charged with here. Even though, Matt, you're right, it'll be kind of preposterous, but you know, politicians do preposterous things all the time.
I am, you know, the underlying matter, I don't think, is in dispute, or at least it's not in dispute in my mind.
The ultimate obviously, underlying matter, not right. not the criminal
exactly.
charges related.
I mean, obviously Trump had the affair with Stormy Daniels, and obviously he tried to keep her quiet by paying the money. That in itself is bad for Trump, right? That's why he tried to keep all of this under wraps. So the very fact that this is now in the open is incredibly embarrassing to him. It's also very uncomfortable for most people. I mean, how do you explain this to your children, right? I mean, it's bad for Trump. It's bad for Trump. And so what you find is that the Republicans are saying, oh, this is, they don't want to talk about that. They don't want to talk about the actual activity, behavior of Donald Trump.
Like the Democrats with Clinton back in the day.
Yeah, they want to talk about, well, the double standard of justice. All right, that's, Trump has used that very effectively in the past. I do think it gets more difficult, though, once, as John says, it's out of his hands now. Because, you know, a Manhattan jury acquitting Donald Trump, not something I really see in the future. But I do see, one, the Trump team moving very quickly as soon as the charges are unsealed and Trump is arraigned to dismiss the case, right? To attack the weaknesses of the case and try to prevent it from ever coming to trial. And then if it does end up going to trial, delay, delay, delay until after the election. And so in some way, I think this is just, it's the beginning. I mean, in my view, it's like the beginning of the end. I don't know what if it's the end of Trump. It could be the end of something else, right? But it seems to me like this is the opening stages of the final act.
Right.
And, well, we just don't know how it was resolved.
Right. To Abe's point, the thing that will save Trump, and by the way, will save Trump in the way that I say, which is that he basically becomes the nominee by acclamation because of the injustice done to him, is if the case is thrown out on summary dismissal by the judge, which could happen if it's as weak as we see. And I think I even mentioned this or brought it up the first day that we talked about the story about the charges themselves, that is a judge really going to want to be the person who presides over a crappy case that he himself believes does not meet the standard, that they indicted a ham sandwich and he wants to let the ham sandwich go? Sure. It's not what the odds would suggest is going to happen. That happens in very few cases, and it often happens in very few criminal cases. It happens in civil proceedings or criminal cases relating. Now, this is a criminal case that apparently will relate to white-collar crime, even if the underlying thing is this, you know, hush money to a porn star thing. So it will be a white-collar crime. It is according to the leaked CNN last night, it's 34 or 36 charges or something of fraudulent business practices. So I suppose you could see a summary dismissal. Absent a summary dismissal, the odds, again, of him being convicted of this crime are very high. And if he is convicted of felonies in New York State, I don't quite know. I know when this has not come up before about what it means to run. Can you run as a felon? I don't think so. He will not be able to run. And will he be able to push this 2 years into 2025? I don't think so. I mean, there is no provision in state law that says, unlike the unspoken provision, it's not even a provision, right? It's sort of the idea that the Justice Department is on some kind of a timetable or a clock relating to the fact that he will be running for president. But that is not a responsibility or an obligation of a New York State court to, you know, make sure that his ability to do that is not interfered with. This is where this thing that you mentioned, Christine, the sort of the crossing into, you know, into new areas is alarming, because first of all, you know, we elected this guy, we elected him with all his baggage, and the idea that you want to somehow go back and retrofit our politics to inoculate us against electing this guy with baggage is problematic. It's a problematic thing that we are facing here, because it then means that nothing is ever closed. Nothing is, the fact that the will of the people was heard in the election in 2016, even though so many people think that it really wasn't because Hillary won the popular vote and all of that, it means nothing will ever close. We will never close this out. I wanted to make another point because my mind is bouncing around all over the place. We mentioned Clinton and Clinton getting away with Lewinsky. Well, ask Al Gore if he thinks Clinton got away with Lewinsky. Al Gore was so enraged with Clinton as he was running for president. They had private polling all over the place. about how, despite the fact that the media were still carrying water for Clinton in 99 and 2000, that he had a huge problem on his hands because of Clinton. And that you could also then say maybe George W. Bush survived and thrived as a candidate in 2020 because he was not Clinton's vice president. And that he ran 10, 15 points ahead of Gore for much of 99, 2000, when things were good in America, because while polling said that Clinton had a positive job approval rating as it came to his behavior in office, that was not what people were actually feeling. I mean, they were feeling that he was a perfectly fine president, but that he was actually kind of scum. He was scummy. He was, this was, they were uncut. They didn't like what had happened here. And I don't know. Like, I don't think that people seeing a president under indictment are going to feel sympathy for him unless the sympathy was already baked in the cake. And this is where the Republican Party is in grave peril. It is in grave peril because it is talking to itself in the mirror about Trump. And that is, you know, and I'm going to go back to these numbers, 74 and 81. Those are the millions that voted. 74 million voted for Trump, 81 million voted for Biden. Was Biden a good candidate for president? Does anybody sitting here say Biden was just a sensational candidate for president and knocked Trump off? Where does Trump get a single vote beyond that 74 million because of his indictment? That's why this idea, again, unless there's summary dismissal and there's a general proposition understood that he was somehow railroaded in this case, which doesn't get to any of the cases, the other cases that Matt mentions, the three other possibilities of January 6th, Mar-a-Lago, and Georgia election subversion, you know, which are all pending. So watch Trump in the next couple of days. He is not going to have wanted to have been indicted. If this was so good for him or something that is going to, but so that's why I'm saying it's crazy that they didn't keep their powder dry. At any moment, they could say he was railroaded. They didn't have to say it the night that he was indicted. On what grounds? That it's like he didn't put up the black box on his Instagram to show that he was supported Black Lives Matter, and then you were going to tell everybody in your eighth grade homeroom that Stacey didn't put up the black box that said Black Lives Matter, that you have to be part of the Insta response. Don't be part of the Insta response.
Well, the Insta response reminded me of the stolen election trope, that where rapidly in the days after the election in 2020, Republicans all got behind Trump's message that there had been fraud and that the election was unfair. And the same thing is happening here. Trump is the victim. Trump is a victim of a double standard of justice. This is a political prosecution. What is it that makes Republicans simply fall in line with wherever Trump happens to be at a given moment? It's a mystery to me. It's a mystery to me. I think it's because of the Trump vote and the way in which the Republican Party has kind of reconstituted itself in Trump's image. And that has real implications for not only the GOP, but for the health of American democracy.
Yeah, I was actually more surprised at Glenn Youngkin's remarks, the governor of Virginia's remarks yesterday. He was speaking about something else, and he, you know, talked about this being a political prosecution. And I was much more surprised that he went there than that DeSantis did. Youngkin, obviously not a declared candidate for president either, but has very successfully navigated a Republican political environment in a purplish state, to a degree that many people are hopeful that he might have higher ambitions. But that was in a weird way more disappointing for the very reasons Matt says. It's just not it again, like I go back to this identity crisis that the Republicans have, and it's not just Trump related. It really is. What does this party stand for? What is its positive message, which we were discussing the other day? If all they're doing is defending their extreme flank and defending a former president who's obviously gotten into whole lots of mischief, some of it potentially criminal, that's not an identity. That's nothing you stand for except for complaining about the weaponization of the political and judicial system.
I mean, I think I would say, in this particular instance, it is kind of a political prosecution, right? I mean, no one doubts, as I was saying,
definitely,
that Trump had the affair and that he tried to cover it up. But the fact of the matter that Alvin Bragg ran for office basically saying he was going to indict Trump, that the case rests on the testimony of Michael Cohen, who is an unreliable witness. The fact that you have this tortured legal theory that is connecting the hush money to a campaign finance violation, which, you know, somehow fuses a state misdemeanor with a federal criminal offense. It's a rickety machine from what we can see of it. And of course, we don't know the details. So there is this political element which can't be denied or dismissed. And I guess it makes it easy for Republicans to kind of rally behind Trump. However, I mean, they don't have to, you know, it's not, I just wonder if Nixon, I mean, during Watergate, there were plenty of Republicans who rallied behind Nixon for sure. But once Nixon was out of office, he was essentially forgotten. Right.
Yeah, I keep saying this is a Republican Party DNA we've lost. When Republicans lose, they are out. Like, it's like, don't even take Michael. I mean, it happened with Dole. It's not that they don't respect their loser elder statesman or whatever, but we used to understand what a loser was, and Trump upended that to ill effect.
Well, the Nixon example is interesting because Nixon acted like he was guilty. That Trump is guilty and acts like he's innocent. And it turns out that that's very important. Again, when you are liberated or released from conventional behavior, and Trump released himself from conventional behavior, it turns out it's very liberating. And he is liberated from it. The question, and then it turns out that his liberation from it has liberated many Republicans from their senses, by which I mean, I just lay this out. So they're all defending Trump, and they are now making it twice as hard for themselves and for any rival to Trump to establish a beachhead to beat him in 2024 by removing from the political conversation in the Republican Party. Here's an eerie parallel that just popped into my head. Democrats weren't allowed to talk about Hillary and the emails, remember? Because that was a political persecution. It was the Benghazi and da-da-da, and we're not going to talk about that, and I'm sick of hearing about your emails, says Bernie Sanders, thus decapitating his own bid against her at the outset, whereas if he had been saying, look, I don't know what's going on here, but there's something hinky about those emails, Madam ex-secretary. And when he starts gaining a beachhead, he then has that front. He cut that front off for himself, right? Here, I'm now trying to think of how I got to this analogy because I'm so all over the map. Well,
the Republicans won't talk about
right. Trump's. So now, what is the thing to run on when you're in a debate against Trump? It's like, I'm sorry, you were a great president. You're in a courtroom docket. This and independent voters aren't going to vote for you, and this is really bad for the Republican Party. And we need to oust Biden and the socialists and the communists and the gender dysphorics and everybody. And we need to get them out of here. And you are standing in the way. Get
but that's
out
very hard.
Of the way. They're not going to be able to do that.
Yeah, because part of what they're saying we need, who and what we need to get rid of, and this is sort of, I think, you know, kind of defining part of their agenda, is an illegitimate system that frames its enemies. So he is, this is the Trumpism that lives beyond Trump now, that you sort of have to do a little bit more than pay lip service to him. And you have to sort of believe that there is a rot in the system that needs to be expunged. And it's, you can't sort of side with the system in against another Republican while doing that.
Okay. Well, here's get out of the race, Ron DeSantis, and save your $100 million, you know, for prosecuting Disney for stealing Orlando, you know, stealing the park district from you once again. I mean, I just don't understand the point of that. If you can't run against Trump on the thing that is the reason that he can't get reelected, then you can't run against
Trump.
Well,
let me present perhaps the logic that's in the minds of Trump's rivals. Just like with Mar-a-Lago, there was a rallying around Trump. But when you look at the polls between Mar-a-Lago and February, when Trump began launching his attacks on DeSantis, there was actually no movement in the polls of the Republican race. If anything, DeSantis was gaining on Trump. So the short-term rallying effect dissipated. And for someone like DeSantis and his camp, for others, they might say, Pence, okay, we're going to say Trump is indicted, we're going to come to his defense. But we know that it's going to hobble him. It will hobble him personally because he has to spend all of his more and more of his time on legal affairs. And it probably will hobble him politically, even among Republican voters who, though they might tell pollsters or they'll tell the media, yes, we're behind Donald Trump, in the back of their heads are saying, maybe we should look for an alternative. So you come out strong for Trump, but then you kind of hang back and you let the news cycle play out and you ready your attack from the right on Trump, which is what DeSantis is preparing. I think that's the way he kind of sees it. I also think there's another sensibility at work in the more anti-Trump sectors of the Republican Party, such as they are, which is that, you know, okay, Trump was indicted. Trump might be indicted three more times by the end of the year. Is Trump really going to run for president? I mean, will he have the ability to? Will just the time management capability of dealing with all these indictments? You know, for years, prominent Republicans have been saying behind the scenes, he's not going to run. He's not going to run. This is all for show. He's doing this for show. He's bilking his supporters for donations to pay for his expenses, right? But at the end of the day, he's not going to run. And I think it's a cost-free proposition for some Republicans to come out and say, this is a political prosecution. Donald Trump is being unfairly treated, because in the back of their heads, they think he won't actually be a candidate by next January.
And they could even say that's something they could say on a debate stage to Trump's face if he's not, you know, being arraigned at the time for a different indictment. They, you know, a Ron DeSantis could say, look, yeah, you're absolutely, you know, your grievance is real. You're being, you know, pursued politically because of, you know, who you are. However, you're not the man for you're not the man for the times. And that's kind of the DeSantis message has basically been not to say outright that Trump's a loser, but to show it, not to tell it, right?
I think the problem
is victory.
Yeah, the problem is that it assumes a lot, and that by the time you get to that point on the debate stage, it may already be too late.
I'll give you the other problem with this, which all goes to people not saying what they mean because they're afraid to say things that will anger other people. DeSantis says you're being persecuted and it's terrible, but you're not the man for this. You lost in 2020 and you can't get another vote beyond the 74 million you got, and it's not going to be enough. And then Trump says, I didn't lose in 2020. I won in 2020.
But that goes against Trump.
Wait. DeSantis has not established in that face-to-face conversation that he believes that Trump lost the election fair and square, because he's already played footsie And everybody else on that's played footsie with the idea that there are real serious lingering concerns with the vote count in 2020. He then has to say to Trump, no, you didn't win in 2020. And then he loses the primary. If the party that we're describing here, the nominating party that we're describing here, is the party that they're responding, they responded to last night, which is, I got to come out and say that he's being railroaded. Every piece of logic here has these moments where the gate comes down and you have to break through the Trump orthodoxy that has been set in order to move forward. And what I look at here, particularly when I see what DeSantis has done, is to say, when push comes to shove, he doesn't know how to do that. And who dares wins? If you're not willing to try to make an original argument or go somewhere without playing, you know, without playing footsie on Ukraine, playing footsie on China, playing footsie here, playing footsie there, because you're also going to then have to run against Biden. And Biden's going to throw up certain kinds of roadblocks against you. And where are you going to go there? Where you're going to have to say things that aren't just immediately appealing to the, you know, to the Republican electorate. And I'm saying there is some lack of facility that he is showing, or that Republicans in general are showing with this. They need to change the neural pathways of the Republican Party in order for them to get
but
nominated.
That's what I'm saying. They don't
president.
Have. They have to have something else to point to, and that's where I think there's plenty of stuff they could focus on. And I do think DeSantis has tried to do a little bit of that, but I don't think they have a message anymore. But if what you're saying is true, John, he will. He could also just be biding his time in saying that. I mean, there are moments where politicians can have those sort of, you know, breakthroughs of the gate, as you say. He doesn't necessarily have to do it now. He also could let someone else who's running in the primary do that. And
no,
not,
he can't.
I guess he can't. Not if he's a front
no,
runner.
He really can't.
But why can't? I don't think it helps Trump. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I'm still too Pollyannish about how far extreme the party's become. But I don't think it helps Trump to be doubling down at the same time that he's facing criminal charges, to also be doubling down and telling the American people something that we rationally, I mean, however much you think there might be difficulties with our electoral system, do they really believe that Trump should be the legitimate president right now? What percentage of the primary voters believe that? I don't know what the numbers are there, but I think that actually, again, it makes him look out of touch, grievance oriented, you know, I don't know. The longer we get from that election, the more that seems to fade, certainly in my mind, but primary voter.
But, you know, it helps to look at what the people whose primary job this is to, like, right, get themselves nominated and elected, what they think and what they feel. And what they saw in 2022 was that being an election denier was crucial to in a
defeat.
Race between an election denier and a non-election denier. Well, let's put it this way. In a race between a greater and lesser election denier, the greater election denier won the primary and lost the general. And then you look, you say, okay, what do you say to Republican voters? Okay, look, here we had a test run. We had a test run. Carrie Lake, Mastriano, all over the place, Herschel Walker, all over the place. People losing right, left, and center if they endorse this, you know, psychotic Trump view. So we need to, you know, just tactically, we need to move beyond that. But they're not going to move beyond it, because we look at it and say, well, voters are rational, and maybe they're not. And what these Republican politicians look at is, I got a bunch of lunatics back here. I'm in an obstacle race. You know, I got to jump over, you know, these hoops, and my legs are tied together, and I have to jump around and do this and just to get to the finish line so then I can be rational and try to beat Biden. And the etch-a-sketching here, which is, you know, what Romney called moving, tacking to the right and then moving to the center, it didn't work for Romney, number one, because he couldn't etch-a-sketch his way out of his own political history. But it doesn't work because... It doesn't work because, you know, you're not establishing an independent political identity apart from Trump. Everything is just, we're tied in this conversation about Trump. He lost the election 2.5 years ago, and he's still the central figure and dominant figure in American politics. So, you know, it's terrible for him. And by the way, the other thing I should say, not again, I'm sorry that I'm being so ADHD here, but if there is a picture of him getting on the plane, getting off the plane, getting fingerprinted, of course, being in handcuffs, whatever goes on at the arraignment, that is going to be terrible for him. It may be the martyrology for the 30% of the electorate that thinks that, you know, he's being hard done. But every 100 million people are going to be wearing a t-shirt with him, you know, with his mugshot on it for 2 years. It's not good. You know, the party that embraces that image is a party that is consigning itself to electoral oblivion. I just, how really you think people who are less, you know, are going to get to the point at which they understand, you see, there's this DA in Manhattan and there's a guy named George Soros. George Soros has a thing called the Open Society Institute. He's funding prosecutors. The prosecutors win elections. And then this prosecutor in New York made a promise that he's persecuting poor Donald Trump. And Donald Trump was brought before the docket and he was da 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 da. They're just going to go. He was in handcuffs. Yeah, I'll vote for the other guy.
You know, there's
if in the Republican primary you don't say, you know what, he's in handcuffs, maybe vote for me instead. If it is impossible for you to say that, then don't run for president. I'm sorry, because either you say that or he becomes the nominee. Either you make this a choice between somebody who is a sleazebag and probably a felon and did all sorts of terrible things, or me. And if you're not willing to say that he's a bad guy, don't run for president. At some point, you got to say he's a bad guy, because the case against Trump is that he's a bad guy. Even bad guys can do good things. John Gotti was really great in his neighborhood in Queens, and he gave out a lot of groceries. Doesn't mean he's not a bad guy. Louis Farrakhan provides social services in Kenwood. He's a filthy, raging anti-Semite and a destructive and horrible force. Bad guys can do good things.
It's always the social services that the bad guys perform.
Yeah.
That's with Hezbollah. That's, oh yeah, Hezbollah is this awful terrorist anti-Semitic organization.
Their school lunch program is fantastic.
Right, exactly. Kills Jews, but
Black,
you know,
Panthers.
What? The social services.
Yeah.
Education and healthcare. I want to bring up the Quinnipiac poll that came out on March 29th. It's interesting.
So that's 2 days ago.
Yeah, 2 days ago, before the actual indictment was announced. But Quinnipiac tested Americans' views of the indictment. And most Americans, 62% of the polling respondents, told Quinnipiac that the Manhattan District Attorney's case involving former President Donald Trump is mainly motivated by politics. However, Americans 57% to 38% think criminal charges should disqualify former President Donald Trump for running for president again. So you can have in your head both ideas, that this is a kind of a political prosecution that's a weak case, the more that you look at it, at least based on what we know today, while also thinking that it should disqualify Trump, who most Americans don't want to run for president anyway. And it puts the Republican Party in this absolute pickle, because everything you say, John, just suggests to me that really the only candidate is Donald Trump, because he's the only candidate who can say, I'm the victim here. And you know what? I think that I won the election. But you notice this gives him something else to talk about besides a stolen election. He can actually move on from that and just talk about the rigged justice system. Double standard of justice. I'm the victim. But you know what? I was the president for 4 years. You loved me as president. And I'm going to come back and I'm going to defeat the deep state that I've been feeding conspiracy theories to you about for 7 years?
Right.
So it's all roads lead to Trump.
Okay, let's take a break and talk about sleep after all of this anxiety that we're provoking here. Abe Greenwald, you are awaiting the delivery of your new sheets from Boll & Branch. Why are you so excited to get these sheets from Boll & Branch?
Eagerly awaiting, because I'm a poor sleeper and I've been sleeping poorly in the past few nights. And I'm looking forward to the pleasures promised and by all accounts delivered by Boll & Branch.
Let's talk about those promises. Wake up feeling rested and refreshed with the softest, most luxurious sheets from Boll & Branch. Each sheet set, slow made for an unmatched softness with 100% traceable organic cotton, they get softer with every wash. The signature hem sheets from Boll & Branch are bestsellers for a reason. With over 10,000 rave reviews, they use the highest quality 100% organic cotton threads on earth. Each sheet set, slow made, as I said, for a superior softness and a better night's sleep. Designed to feel incredible for all sleepers, particularly sleepers like Abe. Made without toxins, free from synthetic pesticides, formaldehyde, other harsh chemicals. They fit the deepest of mattresses and are labeled with top and bottom tags, so making your bed is easier than ever. Best of all, Boll & Branch gives you a 30-night risk-free guarantee with free shipping and returns on all U.S. orders. So get 15% off your first order when you use promo code commentary at bollandbranch.com. That's bollandbranch.com, promo code commentary. Exclusions apply. See site for details. I was just thinking how if you had told me on November, whatever it was, 2020, that it would be March 2023, and that the lion's share of our political discussion over the past 2 months would have been Donald Trump, that I would have prayed for the release, you know, for the sweet meteor of death to hit the earth and just end our misery, despite the fact that I have three wonderful children who deserve to have a future. Of all the facts that should incline one toward crushing morosity, the fact that we are not free of this is the fact that haunts me. That Quinnipiac poll you mentioned, Matt, that's exactly where my brain is. I am perfectly capable of thinking that this is a politically inspired and motivated prosecution and that it disqualifies Trump. Again, because of the underlying fact that Trump has not had to face any kind of, I don't know what you call it, justice, not even justice.
Consequences.
Consequences for degrading our public life in the way that he did by entering it as he did. And I'm not the person who provides those consequences. And voters, as I said, in 2016, elected him president while knowing about the Access Hollywood tape and all kinds of other stuff and Trump University and his schemes and plans and his conduct and treatment of at least one of his children and various other things like that. So I'm not the object of retribution against Trump, even though he is our retribution, he says. I just think that it is possible to look at this and say something has got to give here, and you know, how we go on as a polity when this remains at the center of our public life, I don't really know. Somebody help me out here, because I don't want to end on this on a desperately dark note. The other day, Matt said that, you know, this podcast was maybe deleterious to his spiritual well-being.
But not only my spirit, you notice I have a cold. I have started coming on this podcast. System. You've compromised my immune system. My health is in decline. What are you doing to me?
Noah's over on the editors, and he sounds very jaunty.
He's thriving.
Clearly,
he's thriving.
Clearly, this is all me.
This is like a sci-fi premise where we take on the maladies of the country
of our fallacy, right?
It's the giver. We are taking on the pain.
I can't sleep.
Of all memory.
I mean, I think the only comforting thing I can say, John, is that The future is never a straight line from the present. We don't know what's going to happen. We are in truly unprecedented territory here. And I do think what it suggests is the beginning of some sort of end game. Now, I would say the end game could also lead to Trump's election, right, in 2024. Yeah. That's not a pretty end game, right? Or it could lead to his defeat, or it could lead to somehow his departure from public life. We just don't know, but it feels as though things will start building to a head with this indictment.
Well,
Go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say, not to sound like a Cosmo article from the 1980s, but I've long believed that the Republican electorate's relationship with Trump is kind of like that with a bad but charismatic boyfriend. I said this when he was first elected. But you know what? People go back to bad relationships all the time. They're still getting something from it. There's some way that people kind of negatively feed off each other's terrible energy, all that stuff. That's the Cosmo article part of it. But at some point, if your boyfriend keeps getting arrested or thrown in jail or, you know, doing all kinds of bad stuff, you hope that there's that moment where people think, you know what, he's just too much trouble. And there's other people I could go out with. And I mean, he's obviously a bad husband in Melania's case, not a bad boyfriend. But there's a way in which his emotional manipulation of his people, as he likes to call it, I think Matt's right. There is an end point there. And maybe it's that they double down and they're like, we're with this guy. We're the right. He's ride or die for us. This is it. Or they say, I'm exhausted by this. This is not good for my mental or political health, and let's move on. So that's a choice they have to make. And I just think we'll be a lot more, there's going to be a lot more bitterness and hangover effect if they make the same choice in 2024 that they did in 2016 for the country, and I think certainly for the Republican Party.
Okay, so Matt was heading in a more cheerful direction. You just brought us
staying totally on brand. On brand.
Crashing down. Okay, so... Here, the only thing I will say is this. Got 46% of the vote in 2016 and 45% of the vote in 2016 in a weird pattern that allowed him to succeed to the presidency. He got 46% in 2020 and lost the presidency and pretends that he won, but he lost. And he has no path to the presidency in 2024. Part of my stipulation here is that this will not get him elected president. Because I think Abe said, look, somebody said, I can't remember who said, we know that Democrats are willing to vote for a stroke victim against a successful surgeon who has a TV show if they need to express themselves in the right way. The dragging over glass effect of Trump being the Republican nominee for Democrats and even independents who don't like Trump. I don't even know if you would call it dragging themselves under glass. They would drag themselves through a contaminated nuclear reactor core to get to the voting booth to vote him out. He will not be president in 2025. I mean, I'm now going to stipulate, I'm going to write this down that on March 31st, I said, there is no way Trump will be president in 2025. So if he is, I will then, I don't know, like Werner Herzog, I will eat a shoe. Somebody ate a shoe. I can't remember.
It was
Werner Herzog ate a shoe on camera because he said somebody wasn't going to finish a movie and finish the movie, and then he ate a shoe.
Errol Morris.
So I will eat a shoe. Les Blank? Something like that. Okay. Anyway, so I will eat a shoe if I'm wrong, but I just think that the pattern here is the crushing morosity would be that he's not going to be president, but you know, a senile tree stump will be president in 2025, or a cackling California moron will be president in 2025. I don't know who will be the president.
You notice, and this is the real victim here is Vice President Harris, because here she's been on this wonderful trip, international trip to Africa all week. She's apparently letting her hair down. I read from Eugene Daniels in the playbook. She's having a great trip. And who's paying attention? No, no one. Trump once again coming in and stealing Kamala's thunder.
Well, you know, what's better for her? I think it's better for her not to be I think she, like Biden, needs to pursue a basement strategy. The Absolutely. Less she is seen, well, I think, the better for her.
And, you know, and
particularly if he doesn't end up running, which of course he is.
But, and the Trump trials are a great way for the Democrats to pursue a basement
to go strategy. Into the basement.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't need to do anything. Just let him take the spotlight.
Exactly. Okay. Well, Tuesday afternoon, we will see. Wednesday, we'll be here Monday and Tuesday, but obviously Wednesday morning is going to be the sequel to this as we see what actually is in the case and what the visual effects of Trump's surrender are going to be. So we will somehow temper. We will get through the 2 days until Wednesday, and we have to get through what I hope will be a wonderful weekend for everybody. I hope you, if you listened all the way to the end, we're actually kind of cheerful. I don't know. I mean, even though I'd say we're morose and Matt's got a cold and Abe can't sleep and I don't know, but we will, by the way, I'm going to finish with this one tip. I'm providing you with a tip. If you were in the ambit of my voice, I went to see a preview of the new revival of the Lerner Lowe musical Camelot at Lincoln Center. Do not see this. I'm saving you hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars. It's one of the worst things I've ever seen. Actually, the first act isn't so terrible. The second act is literally the worst piece of theater I think I've ever sat through. Don't spend. No Camelot for you. This is a consumer tip. We'll be back on Monday for Abe, Christine, and Matt. I'm John Podhoretz. Keep the candle burning.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.